Hey guys, welcome to Tech Intern, where we sit down with the real students that tell us about their experiences and how that intern affected their career, and hopefully yours too. All right, Javin's been on the show before. He's a software engineer at Uber, and we're really delighted to have him back on the show. Thanks for joining us, Javin.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
You know, I've had a lot of people reach out after your first episode, which was kind of just about your general story. And I think that was the first real episode. So if anyone wants to listen, go take a listen to that. And today we're going to be talking a little bit more about side projects and learning a new programming language and whatnot. But first off,
cool.
How's the new apartment hanging?
It's awesome. I actually can open the window without people directly having the ability to look at my apartment, which is really beautiful.
Yeah, that's
just loving it.
That's a bonus. That's definitely a bonus.
Yeah.
So first question, I had this as a real question from somebody recently. And the question is, should I make a side project to put on my resume or should I learn a new programming language? What do you think about that?
I think... Honestly, that question, I don't think those are two mutually exclusive things. I think while making a side project, often you want to kind of choose a different language. Different languages have different kind of use cases and different times when you want to use it. And like Java is better for kind of like big data computation, whereas like Golang is maybe a better kind of server language at this point. So I don't think those are really mutually exclusive. I would say I'm not really a person that thinks, hey, I need to learn all of these languages to put it on my resume. That's not really something I look for in resumes. It's not something that I do myself. I think as an engineer, once you kind of learn the principles of the language, then you can just easily learn different languages, and it's mostly syntax that you pick up. So I would say, don't really focus on the language. Choose a language that is maybe optimal for your side project and learn it while you're building your side project. But personally, I never think of myself as being like, oh, today I want to learn Rust. That's a new shiny Google language. Like that's not something I'm just going to be like, hey, let's learn Rust. Maybe if I have a side project that Rust is like very kind of optimal for, then I'll build it with Rust and learn Rust
right.
in the process.
Well, I feel like a lot of specific tasks require a specific programming language. So if you want to get into more like not hardware, but really low level positions, then you're going to be using C. If you want to do, you know, web development on the front end, you'll be using JavaScript and some kind of frameworks to go along with it. So I think the first thing to do, right, is to kind of decide where you want to go, like what tech you want to be working on, and then try to build a project that relates to that technology. And you will, in the process, kind of learn the language, right?
Yeah, and it's also kind of a good opportunity for exploration of different languages and different kind of tech stacks. Like us being at these big companies, we do have kind of defined tech stacks, but it's always in our kind of engineering. It's kind of our job to also think about expanding these tech stacks. Maybe there's a better tech stack that we can use. So it's also a really good opportunity for you to say, okay, I'm starting up a web app and looking at what to use. Let's get the comparisons of Angular, Vue, Ember.js. And then you can say, okay, Ember.js, maybe not the best if I'm just trying to like get an MVP out. Vue, maybe is a good thing to get like an MVP out.
Right.
Angular, maybe it's like a good middle ground. And just like doing that kind of research is just going to be so beneficial for you in the future, no matter kind of where you end up, which that's good.
I love that explanation, actually. I recently had somebody that works on the Merle stack, and they were asking me, well, do you know, like, or they only knew one or two things from Merle, and they were like, I want a job on the Merle stack, but, like, do I have to know every single part of it, like, and what if I only know other languages instead? And I love that you said that you kind of pick the tool that's best optimal for the job. And if you go into an interview and you don't know all the technologies they use, that's completely okay because you have insight into other ones. Yeah, exactly. Like you said, they're always thinking about how they can optimize their work. And if you have perspective on something that they don't, that's probably even better.
Yeah, imagine going into an interview and you're at this maybe a financial tech company and they're like, hey, oh yeah, we run Fortran, our servers are Fortran, we're super like, oh yeah, this is awesome. And as an engineer, if I go into that interview, I'm like, okay, but like, why? I think it would be a good thing for that company to hear that it's like, okay, why are you still using this like kind of language? It's super legacy. There's lots of kind of way better languages out there. So honestly, that's probably a good selling point almost in interviews, being able to say, hey, like, yes, your stack is working, but it could work a lot more efficiently, a lot better, and could be more maintained. And honestly, that's probably like a plus one on the interviews, like checkbook. So
I agree. And it's not necessarily saying like that, you know, you picked the wrong thing for your stack. It's more so just like, well, we had two different goals when we built our projects. You're building a company, so you used, I don't know, Ember.js because it's more maintainable, but I was making an MVP, so I used React or Vue or something like that. And so being able to even have those conversations and prompt those questions, I think is going to make you stand out in an interview.
Yeah, it shows you kind of have that knowledge and it shows that you really have that kind of breadth of experience where, I mean, I think I said this in our kind of first talk, I don't think being a good engineer is just being a good coder. I think that's like a very small aspect of it. And having that breadth of knowledge is something that you just gain with experience and doing these kind of side projects and doing these kind of research. Like it is easy if you know Go and you're like, hey, okay, let's just use Go. Maybe it's easier, you know Go, you can just like start a server up and you can do it really quickly. Maybe that's what you want to do. But honestly, I would say take a step back, think about other opportunities and you're going to be beneficial. Even if you don't choose it, it's going to be beneficial for you in the long term future.
So I had a really similar question to this one. At the very beginning of university. So when I went into university, I only knew one language. It's called ActionScript 3, and it's for programming games, and it is the most useless thing ever. And I actually didn't even really know how to program in it, so I won't claim that I did. And then after first term in Waterloo, we learned Racket, which is also equally useless. So
yep.
My question was not so... Well, coming into the tech industry with basically no insight into how it works and just asking myself, like, what language should I learn as a marketable language? Like, I want to just do the minimal amount that will actually make me marketable to companies. What do I do?
Okay. Well, I think that's a fair question. And that's a question that most people kind of all go into. I had the same thought when I was like initially attending Waterloo. I think the first thing you need to break down is what kind of component do you want to do? Do you want to do web? Do you want to do mobile? Do you want to do backend? Do you want to do more like DevOps, things like that? And once you kind of say, okay, I like making nice, beautiful websites that attract customers. I'm personally a backend engineer, so pretty much everything I do, no one really knows about it happening. It's just kind of happens. So as a backend engineer, you don't really get the recognition as like the front end engineers, but that's fine. That's something that like I've accepted. And maybe you as a person, you want that recognition. You want to be like, hey, here's this website that millions of people touch every single day. That's a pretty cool thing to do. Maybe because that you want to do like front end. And at that point you're like, okay, let's take a bit of exploration on what a front-end language entails, what kind of a web app is. And at that point, I would honestly look at forums and I would kind of look at more recent forums of, I know Reddit is kind of biased in a lot of ways, but Reddit is also a good kind of like open user forum. Just search like what are good web tech stacks. read some articles, read some Medium articles. There's a ton of articles. People have different opinions, and there's going to be clashing ones, of course, but picking out the correct and like important parts of each opinion will help you make your own opinion. And right. No opinion is wrong. It's all just an opinion.
Right.
So I would say first kind of define where you want to do it. Like, what do you want to do? Web, mobile, backend, DevOps. There's a kind of a lot of variety. Yeah. And then once you're there, maybe just, if you have really, really no clue whatsoever, look at a user forum and kind of pick people's brains and see what they're using and why they're using it. And that can kind of lead to your opinion.
I agree 100%. But in my situation, I remember being like really outside of the tech industry and not knowing what I wanted to go into or what each job entailed. So I guess sure. just to become, so I don't want to like brush past what you said. I agree with everything you said, but to kind of expand on that, if you're just looking to be a general software engineer, you just want to get your foot in any company, like what language would you suggest people learn immediately, or you know, what frameworks or what technologies?
Okay. Yeah. I'll just say pretty much my current favorite language just for like each kind of stack. I think mobile, I'm not really a mobile developer, but like Android, just Java is kind of good. And if you're in kind of Western America, then, or the Western hemisphere, sorry, then you probably want to like learn kind of iOS development. If you're doing kind of web, I would say React is probably the best one at this point, in just my opinion, in terms of developer velocity as well as maintainability. I always have a soft spot for Ember, but if you're just kind of starting, I would probably advise against Ember. So that's also kind of like JavaScript. React is kind of a JavaScript framework. So that would be like the web app thing that I would use. And personally for backend, I would say I'm a very strong Golang supporter at this point. I think it's a very, very amazing language. So that would just be my kind of thought. I would do like a Golang server with maybe a Postgres database,
right?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And just kind of like a default REST server.
Yeah, I think I like the idea of not specifically just choosing one language and being like, if I want to market myself, I got to just learn this one language and do like 100 lead code questions in this one language. Whereas you can expose yourself by making a whole new project and expose yourself to all of these different levels of it. And it doesn't necessarily need to be a really complex project. That's something that I recognized when I was in university. I always, and you were with me because we tried these projects together, we always went too big. I don't know if you remember that first project we did, Study Buddy or something like that.
Yeah.
And the idea that we were going to like have a whole basically social network and you're going to be able to connect with anyone and like message people. And we hardly got the login function working. And
I don't think we did.
I don't think we did. And on top of that, I'm pretty sure we planned on storing passwords in plain text. So,
first year, we were probably like, oh, let's just toss it in like a CSV file.
Right. And I mean, so it's a good thing that we didn't end up completing that, but we had no chance because we set ourselves up for failure by making the end goal just way too big, you know, like just as big as Facebook almost. So what you need to do is kind of scope down and make something manageable and expose yourself to a few different technologies, and that will round you out. That will round out your resume, I think.
Yeah, I think the main goal of doing a side project is getting to that MVP, getting to an actual like finished state. If it's a small finished state, but it works, it's still a finished state. You've been able to push through, Kool-Aid manned your way through the wall.
Yeah.
And you've got this like finished kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's the main, it doesn't have to do very much. It could be a simple website with a simple server that really, the server doesn't really have to even be there, but at least the connection is made and you can say, hey, here's this web app with this backend server.
Yeah.
I have made this connection. I know kind of how a client and server relationship works. And it's just like being able to not get demoralized and actually finish the project, which is a big problem which we had, we've had so many ideas that we've never finished. And it would have been good if we finished a few more of those. But.
Definitely. And I mean, I think, like you said, just scope down, right? Make something manageable. And you don't have to make it for a million users. You could make, like, for example, here's an idea for a small project. I think that if you're going to make a project, make it small and make it something that you would actually use. So maybe just make it a place for you to store, like, all of your quick notes. So you take, you have, like, a website, and on your phone, like, you'll just type in a note or something and post it. And then all of a sudden it's online, and it's like you use it as like a cross-platform copy paste. You know, sometimes you want to, instead of sending yourself a message on Facebook Messenger so you can copy it on the other machine, you just put it on this website and then you can grab it from the other machine. Like, that is something that you'll actually use. And so, but it's also something that's going to touch a few different stacks. And so that's going to like really set you apart, because when someone asks you in an interview, why did you build this? You could say, well, I built it to use it.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing. Honestly, if you try to build something that you're never going to use, then you're also setting yourself like back a bit, because you're probably not going to finish it, because you're probably not going to have the motivation to finish it, because why do it, really? If you're doing it especially only for your resume, then you're probably not going to finish it. I think that's kind of something that I've learned in my career, is don't do it for the resume, do it because you want to do it and you're interested in doing it. Just doing things for the resume is cool and all, but you really rarely finish it.
Yeah,
it's kind of
and when you do experience. I feel like the recruiters can smell that from a mile away, you know, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you're showing off that you know skills, but recruiters love when you build stuff for use. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people can build the same repetitive thing. And if a recruiter sees it on 100 resumes, then like, they're just going to ignore it.
Right. And you know, I have a great example of this. So when I was first getting into Android development, I followed a Udemy course. And one of the Udemy course, like, you know, things to do was to make a weather app. And you can probably imagine, everybody that did that course comes out of it with a weather app. But for me, there's a few currencies that I convert from all the time, like this currency to that currency. And so I just wanted a place that I could really quickly, you know, transfer these currencies and see their prices. So in using the exact same knowledge and almost following the same, like, exact same course, I was able to build a different product than the one that everybody else built. So if you're going to use a Udemy course and you're going to follow like a tutorial, there's no reason for you to do it 100% the same way that person did it, because everybody else did it that way.
Honestly, you shouldn't follow it 100%. You're doing yourself a disservice by following it 100%. Following someone's code 100% is like, why are you even doing it?
I couldn't agree more.
Just follow what they're saying and follow what they're doing, because they're explaining how it works. But you don't need to follow what their like goal is.
Yeah.
I would honestly say, like, well, I don't really do Udemy courses. I'm not really good at, you know me, I'm not very good at like attending things and learning from like attendance. I'm more just better at learning myself. So I never really did that. But honestly, if I was you guys and I was doing this Udemy course, I would watch it through, take notes, and then just completely do something different, like completely different.
Yeah.
Maybe use similar components because you know how they work, but something completely different.
Yeah.
Or honestly, you now know these components. You're working on an Android app. You now know there's this weather component. You probably have this kind of index of components now. Just look at other components and kind of do your own thing.
Definitely.
And it's going to be better. Like reading documentation and like looking up kind of indexes of information, like in Golang, I know I keep coming back to this, there's this GoDoc, which is their kind of like HTML website of their kind of language. And you just, as an engineer, you're in that pretty much 24/7. You don't remember syntax that much. You know it exists, but there's no point in remembering it. So kind of like, even like looking at different components is practicing reading documentation, which is a very important aspect of being an engineer.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah. Well said.
And writing documentation. Let's not forget writing documentation. Always document what you do. I think I actually read something, and this is very on the similar vein of this podcast. If you have a side project on GitHub and there's a README that says, "Hello world," no one is going to look at it. You need a README that is documented, is nice, is readable. It can be read from a non-tech perspective. You need a README. Like, there's no exception at all. Like, there's just no middle ground. You need a README. It needs to be nice if you want to actually like advertise this kind of
definitely
project.
And I mean, throw in some screenshots. That's what I see when I look at people's GitHubs all the time. They're like, this is a great site and you can do this and that and whatever, and I'm like, well, am I gonna clone the repo and run it? Like, I don't want to install all your node dependencies. Show me what it looks like.
Or even better, I mean, I really love this. Is if you really, really want to go very far and you're really dedicated about your project, I like GitHub repositories that have like a web kind of representation of how it's working. Like, a lot of open source tools will have maybe like a GitHub Pages, just a static web page that just like shows an animation of how it works or shows a video of how it works or something like that. Maybe that's a bit too far for pretty much like many, if not all, projects, but it's a cool thought.
Definitely. Once you get up, like, and you're making more complex things in upper years, I think that's a great avenue. But just to get yourself in the door, like the barrier, you should at least be putting a screenshot in there.
Mm-hmm. Like, it needs to be, almost no one's going to clone it. Like, when we look at resumes and when we look at like GitHub kind of libraries and packages and applications, I'm not cloning it. Like, I'm just not going to do that.
Yeah.
I'll look at the README, I'll read the README, and I'll kind of look at it and be like, what are they trying to do? What did they do? And if there's a screenshot, that's amazing.
Yeah. And it, like you said, if there's no information in the README, I'm not going to read the code line by line. I mean, GitHub is a repo. It's not an editor.
Yeah. Well, actually.
Well, it is actually a bit of an editor too, but.
If you work at Microsoft, man.
Yeah. If you're doing your commits and your pull requests in GitHub,
you're doing something wrong.
You're doing something really wrong. Unless it's a README change, then I don't care.
Yeah, that's acceptable.
Okay. So, like, last thing I just want to go over is just kind of let's chat about our side projects, the ones that we did when we were in university. We already kind of went over the very first one that crashed and burned, but do you want to tell me about some of the other ones you did?
Sure. Yeah. So I've done many different side projects in my time, and I think every single one of them has failed. But the experience has led me in some way to where I am now. So that's nice and all. I definitely know a lot of different stacks from it, so I'm very appreciative of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Just to like name a few things that I kind of did, maybe you want to follow lead. They're not really that marketable or anything. They're just kind of cool. I built a Reddit throwaway app, which would essentially just randomize and post comments and like images and stuff on Reddit, pretty much through a proxy of like 25 throwaway apps. So essentially it would completely isolate the user from the message through just randomly posting on the different kind of throwaway accounts.
Yeah.
I mainly did that just because I never really had any Android experience, so I was just trying it out. Or actually, that was iOS, so I never really did any iOS stuff, so I was just trying that out. Like the backend component, it was pretty easy. Mainly the iOS part was the difficult part, which was interesting. Some other things were, I remember at one point I was trying to build a website called Instabet, which would essentially like lock two people into a bet, and then if once both people kind of acknowledge the outcome of the bet, the money kind of immediately gets paid out to the winner. That was cool. I just had a lot of trouble doing kind of the web side of it. I'm very, very not design oriented. So it kind of just looked like a dumpster fire on the web. So that was kind of when I realized that I'm probably much better backend developer than a mobile or front end.
That was a good one. I remember that one. Great idea, but I at least for me in Waterloo, I was just way too busy to actually follow through on ideas like that.
Yeah, I mean, me and you had many ideas together. We had that like study buddy one. There's probably some other ones I'm trying to think of right now.
I remember one of the only ones that other ones that I definitely put on my resume was this one. Spotify to YouTube MP3. And so I used to have, so for Americans listening, phone plans in Canada are like atrociously bad, but I had this one that gave me free Spotify, but I was still paying like $80 a month for it or something and getting like 100 megabytes. So I had to switch off of it to a different plan, and that one didn't give me Spotify, so I lost access to Spotify. And being like a poor student, I didn't want to pay for Spotify, right? This was back when it was like $10 a month. And I know they have a student account now, but this was before that. So I wrote this application that basically used the Spotify API, and it got my entire list of songs. And then it used like YouTube and the YouTube DL library to like search for those songs on YouTube and then download the MP3s from them. And then I just put them on my phone. And so I didn't market this. First off, I'm pretty sure that's illegal if I sold it to anyone or if I let anyone else use it. I just used it for myself. And second off, It wasn't fantastic because not everybody was a fan of this app. I put it on there and a few people were like, wow, that's smart. Like, oh, I'm glad you used that. And like, that's actually cool. And some people were like, why, you don't believe in paying artists? And I was like, okay. I took it off my resume. I don't even think it's on my GitHub anymore. But that was one of the ones I actually followed through on.
Yeah, that's a good one. That was actually a really, that's a cool one. I'm glad that you actually got some kind of random user feedback from that.
Well, they were interviewers. I was impersonating there. So one of the interviewers was like, yeah, this is actually like cool. I'm glad you did this. Like it shows some like that you're using your code. And the other people were kind of just like, what?
You don't stealing.
Believe? Stealing. And I was like, damn, okay. Well, I didn't sell it to anyone. Nobody else used it. It was just me. And now you'll be glad to hear I have a Spotify account, so.
Nice. Well, in a similar kind of vein to that, I built a website. I took it down at this point, mostly based on kind of the legal area of it. It was essentially would automate the passage between live streaming, like video game live streaming websites to YouTube, completely through AWS and AWS kind of like batch jobs, which was really cool. Essentially, the entire premise was someone is streaming right now. You provide the URL. Essentially, the server acts like it is watching the stream, and instead of throwing away the video content, it saves it into an MP4 file. Once the user on the web app wants to end the clip, they press a button, it interacts with the server, it tells the clip to stop, and immediately starts processing and uploading to YouTube with like comments and everything like that, as well as do some funky video processing in the intermediary. You can like define like an intro and an outro, and it would automate the video processing to add those things to the video and then upload it to YouTube after which. That, of course, mainly because of legal concerns, I've taken that down. But just because I did it, I now have an open source package, which it's basically 2 to N MP4 video processing package where you can just provide any number of MP4 files, and it will kind of either pass overrides of kind of output video quality and desires, or it will automate kind of like choosing the optimal one, and it'll just process it and give you a new combined MP4 file. So it failed, but I learned a lot. I learned a lot about AWS. I learned a lot about AWS EC2, batch jobs, things like that. Even Route 53, which is just a random AWS service, which I didn't even know existed until I did this.
What is Route 53?
It's kind of like a DNS system to reroute requests. It's really hard to explain. Okay. It's basically kind of like a DNS system. So you define like A name files and C name files, which allow you to say, if this URL gets hit by this, then we should pass it off to this new URL,
right?
Which kind of is needed in a lot of things if you want to essentially make your AWS EC2 box open to the public. You almost always need kind of like DNS or a domain for it, and you usually need to set up like Route 53, like rerouting, right, to get into the AWS VPN systems, right, and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. So we have similar stuff in Azure, but I haven't worked with AWS. I only work with Azure.
I wonder why.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for joining me, Javin. I think this is a really great episode, and I think people are going to take a lot away from it.
Hopefully, some of my random rambling is worthwhile to someone out there.
I think it will be. I'll continue to pass on messages from people that send them to me. I've actually had like at least 4 or 5 people reach out to me about your episode specifically, and people got a lot of out of it, which is why we did this one in the first place. So thank you for joining us again.
Thank you.
Please don't forget, reach out, techintern.com or the Tech Intern Instagram handle, and we can set up a coffee chat or a resume critique or something like that. Thanks so much. I'll see you next Monday.